Well, there I am. Conquer the king. King of all the land. Who'd have thought that? But how did I come to this, I hear you say? And who are those strange fellows that surround my throne? I hear you also say. Well, it's a long story. Come closer, and I'll tell you.
I'm just a little newborn baby! Wait, who exactly am I talking to again? And what's language anyway?
Hello and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
And I continue to be Gibbon.
And welcome to our first episode in our Conker's Bad Fur Day Spotlight series. This is a bit of a milestone for us, because I feel like this is the last game of this era that we have not really done a spotlight on, at least a significant game from Rare for the Nintendo 64. And you know, I have been saving this one. I thought for the 21st anniversary we would do a Conker's Bad Fur Day kind of retrospective. And I, even going into this season, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it, if I was going to finally pull the plug for the 20th anniversary or wait for the 21st, because that's funny. It's a funny joke. But then, you know, Rare acknowledged the 20th anniversary, and the more I thought about it, I was like, let's just do it. Let's just get it done.
Yeah, when you've done a spotlight episode on Dinosaur Planet before you've done a spotlight episode on Conker's Bad Fur Day.
To be fair, it wasn't a spotlight episode. We don't do spotlight episodes for canceled or heavily altered games, but, you know,
You can call it whatever you like, but there's an episode for
it. Now, obviously, we've talked about Conker's Bad Fur Day quite a bit on The Conversation,
but
we've never actually set time aside to do the dedicated spotlight treatment. And so this is going to be a three-parter, just like Banjo-Tooie was. And the first part, we're not going to really talk about the game so much on this first part. What we're going to be talking about is the culture and sort of the time period leading up to the game from the time it was first announced. When I say it, I mean Conker's Quest, when that was first announced, up until the dawn of the release of Bad Fur Day. So this is quite a storied history here, and I feel like we can't really set the stage for Bad Fur Day proper without really setting aside this whole time to discuss how we even got to Bad Fur Day from the original conceptions of Conker. And this isn't... like, this also isn't going to be a 12 Tales Conker 64 episode, just like we did for Dinosaur Planet. One, we don't have a ROM of 12 Tales Conker 64 to really parse through.
Yet, fingers crossed.
But also because I feel like that's a good fertile topic in and of itself. Like, we could really dive into that, but we only have so much to go on, and you know, I don't want to just say this is going to be our definitive take on 12 Tales Conker 64, so this is just going to be an amalgam of both versions of Conker as we set the stage to actually discuss the gameplay. So, the Conker's Bad Fur Day, Gibbon, and of course you're here. Of course you're here for the Conker's Bad Fur Day episode, because, you know, I like to match the topics with co-hosts that I feel best exemplify them. And, you know, so Cameron was my choice for Dinosaur Planet and the discussion we just had for that. Sea of Thieves will generally be Jeff Onan. And you have somehow carved out a niche on DK Vine as the arcade Donkey Kong expert. the mobile title guru, and I have some thoughts I want to share with you about Mario Kart Tour at some point this season, because okay. I've gotten a new phone, and I'm starting to enjoy it begrudgingly.
It's really fun, except for when it's not.
Yeah, that's basically my review, but at least I'm not so damn cynical about it. And you've also become known as the Conker guy, which is just a weird blending of things.
Well, I know how it happened. It happened because of Rusty Pup, and yeah, but...
Yeah, I just wouldn't have imagined, like, close to a decade ago, that the person defending the Mario vs. Donkey Kong series on the DK Vine forum would be the one I would eventually be sitting down with to do the spotlight episode for Conker's Bad Fur Day.
I don't know how that happened.
But, you know, life takes us through twists and turns, so it's a long, dusty road, and we don't know what's around the corner. Such is the case for Conker itself, because our story begins in 1997, Gibbon. And that's when Rare announced two games, Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Quest. Now, Banjo-Kazooie, obviously, was being developed by the original Donkey Kong Country team, by and large. I mean, you know, obviously there were faces, names, part of that team who didn't work on the first two DKC games, but it was mostly, you know, the Males brothers, Chris Sutherland's, that core group that went on to do Banjo-Kazooie. And Banjo-Kazooie was a game, you know, we've talked about all these games so much here on the conversation.
Yeah, just a tiny amount.
Yeah, so I don't need to explain what Banjo-Kazooie is. I don't even need to explain what Conker is, really. I don't even need to be doing this. I could go to bed right now. But Banjo-Kazooie was being developed by the DKC team for Nintendo. They were doing this project for Nintendo to publish it. For Nintendo to have a big marquee game on Nintendo 64 as part of the Rare Nintendo partnership. Conker's Quest, on the other hand, was a project taken on by what's mostly tantamount to the Killer Instinct team. At the very least, Killer Instinct veterans who went on following, I guess, Killer Instinct Gold. I don't know the exact lineage there, but... It was Mark Betteridge and Chris Seaver, the latter of whom would become, you know, inseparable from the Conker brand, to the point where Conker is kind of viewed as this auteur project, like almost exclusively tied to Chris Seaver.
I mean, his Twitter handle is Conker himself.
Right.
So,
I mean... Considering he voices Conker, and he's always voiced Conker.
Yeah, he's never not voiced Conker.
Even in Diddy Kong Racing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. To the fact that he still voices Conker to this day, and he hasn't even worked at Rare in years.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, when you think of Conker, I think everyone knows Chris Seaver. We're going to try to shine a spotlight in this spotlight on other people of the Conker team as well, because I feel like, you know, credit is deserved all around, but Chris Seaver, he's going to be the name that keeps coming up, just because I think he was the driving force eventually with turning Conker 64/12 Tales, or Conker's Quest /12 Tales Conker 64 into Bad Fur Day. But there's also composer Robin Beanland, who played a significant role in shaping the story of Conker as well, not just the music. And, you know, there's also other notable figures who would join the team who didn't work on Killer Instinct, such as a new hire who joined at Rare and then, you know, leaped into Conker, and that's Louise O'Connor, who is now a very significant figure at Rare. So we'll get into all of that as we discuss the twists and turns of Conker and the actual game itself over the next three episodes. But looking at Banjo-Kazooie and Conker as they were announced at E3 97, and kind of looking at Donkey Kong as well, because Donkey Kong was also the big kind of animal mascot-y rare property at this time. So the genres of these three rare animal mascot franchises, it was in place even then, even from the start. And even though Conker changed dramatically from when it was first announced, it I think still held true even after the reimagining. And that's Donkey Kong Country is this pulpy adventure serial, sort of like Indiana Jones apes and monkeys. Banjo-Kazooie is sort of a fractured fairy tale. And Conker is a Tex Avery style animation tribute. Rare's own take on that kind of genre of Looney Tunes animation. And, you know, that held true throughout. And, you know, I think it's still true today. But, you know, each one kind of had a niche. So even though a lot of the reviewers around this time really, like, pointed out, like, oh, wow, Rare's just doing cutesy animal games, each one had a personality and a voice from the outset. It wasn't, like, you know, Project Dream, even before Banjo and Kazooie, you know, took it over, Project Dream was heavily based in fairy tales. I mean, you had Dreamland of Giants, which kind of morphed into a Peter Pan-esque pirate romp, and then became Banjo-Kazooie with them facing off, you know, a wicked witch. And
now I want them to add some Peter Pan stuff to Sea of Thieves.
But, and, you know, Conker was more in the style of Western animation. And I like how each had a distinct personality. And it was clear even from the reveal at E3 97 that each one had this distinct personality. But I remember reading the Nintendo Power, where I was expecting the reveal for Donkey Kong for the Nintendo 64, and I was crestfallen to see, instead Rare was doing these two different games, Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Quest, and I was just thinking, how dare they? How dare they betray Donkey Kong? And that was my first thought, but then in the back of my head, I remember staring at the render of Banjo, thinking, you know, he looks like he could take place in Donkey Kong's world. Like, he looks like he could be a character that's Donkey Kong adjacent. I wonder if any Donkey Kong characters are going to appear in Banjo-Kazooie. And for Conker, I also had that thought. I was like, could all of these games take place in the same universe? And that's what I was hoping for from the outset, once, you know, I kind of accepted that no N64 Donkey Kong game was coming in the immediate future, even though, you know, this is before Diddy Kong Racing was announced. So, you know, Banjo-Kazooie, I was really hoping for, because, you know, it starred a bear, and coming off of Donkey Kong Country 3, it just felt apropos. But for Conker, you know, he was a cartoon anthropomorphic squirrel, and it didn't feel at the time like it was as good of a fit with the pre-established Donkey Kong Country universe. You know,
that's fair. I can see how you'd be hard pressed to find a connection at that point in time.
You know, before Diddy Kong Racing, absolutely. I mean, it you know, because aside from primates and kremlings and bears, you know, all the animals in the Donkey Kong series were generally portrayed as wildlife. You know, like Rambi was a big dog, essentially. Yeah. So it was kind of hard for me to imagine, you know, a squirrel running around in tennis shoes in that world. I would come to terms with it very quickly as a result of the months to come. But yeah, I was still wondering, though, like, maybe it's going to, you know, all be in this shared universe. I don't know if I even like refer to it as a shared universe in my head, because I don't know if that terminology
Think that terminology was around yet.
But the interesting thing about Conker's Quest, and I am drinking, by the way, so if my enunciation gets sloppy, that is because I am drinking all three of these episodes, because I feel like I would be doing Conker a disservice if I didn't. So
I don't have soft alcohol, so I'm going to refrain for now.
But you have hard alcohol.
Yes, there's an entire shelf of it right next to me.
Okay, so what's the problem? I mean, when in the Panther Kingdom? Yeah. So the thing about Conker's Quest was that it was going to be published by Rare. Developed by Rare, published by Rare. This was a big deal for Rare because, you know, Rare was always this kind of journeyman studio. They always had their games published by games like publishers like Trade West and Acclaim, and eventually, of course, Nintendo, the big partnership with Nintendo. But you know, they didn't publish games themselves. I don't know about the Ultimate Play the Game era, but as far as like Rare in that era, Rare didn't publish games, but they had they were flush with cash. They pounded with pounds after the success of Donkey Kong Country and Killer Instinct, and they were going to get into self-publishing, and this was a big deal for them. They were still going to publish exclusively for Nintendo as per the relationship they had with Nintendo, and Nintendo did have a financial stake in Rare at the time, even if they didn't outright own them. So Conker's Quest was going to be the first game published by Rare, and, you know, with all the risk and rewards therein. So, you know, Banjo-Kazooie was being developed for Nintendo, and this is like a historical fact that is lost in the modern era, but Banjo-Kazooie was a Nintendo IP. Conker was meant to be a Rare IP. And that was, like, I think, at this point in time in 97, internally, Conker was viewed as the project that was kind of head and shoulders above Banjo-Kazooie. Because, like, the interesting thing about both of these games being developed around the same time is they were both 3D platformers with animal, you know, mascot-y characters. And that, of course, created a friendly internal rivalry between the two. And I think one of the great untold stories, like, I think there could be an amazing documentary in this whole period.
Yeah.
Where you've got the kind of competition between the Banjo team and the Conker team, and the way both projects influenced each other. And, you know, this is kind of like the evil genius of the Stamper Brothers during this time. And, I mean, honestly, it's why Rare floundered so much when they went to Microsoft initially, because this kind of competitive game development strategy, like, it worked wonders for them on the Nintendo 64, but as game development got more expensive and longer and more
expansive,
complicated, it was ultimately ruinous, I think, when you look at the litany of projects that failed to get off the ground on the Xbox and Xbox 360.
Yeah, I think there were multiple factors there, though, like Microsoft's gradual disillusionment with animal mascots sure. in general.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I mean,
the growing success of their FPS games and other factors.
Yeah, I mean,
led to a why did we buy these guys after all sort of attitude.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's not exclusively Rare's fault, but it's also not exclusively Microsoft's fault either. As, you know, I think was our preferred narrative during that actual era, just blaming Microsoft for Rare's failure to launch much of anything except, you know, obviously the games we got. But anyway, you know, Project Dream, originally starring the human character Edson, started on the Super Nintendo immediately after Donkey Kong Country 2, shifted to the Nintendo 64, but was mostly aimless. And then Conker just, like, got off the ground so quickly, and they had, like, structure, and it was just wowing everybody at Rare, and it really put the Dreams team to the their feet to the fire, and made them essentially, like, as kind of a Hail Mary pass, they looked at Super Mario 64 and they were like, let's just do this. And then they eventually quickly, like, very quickly, Banjo-Kazooie came together. And then it got to the point where the Conker team looked at Banjo-Kazooie, and Banjo-Kazooie was this amazing project that all it needed was that little spark of inspiration from Super Mario 64. And then all of a sudden, the Conker team was playing catch up. And I just love that. I love that there was this back and forth between the two. It's like the Beatles and the Stones in the 60s, right? Like, it's the kind of thing that you're used to seeing, like outside studios competing with each other, but this internal, like, friendly rivalry between the two.
That's true. There's a lot of historical back and forth between different companies pinging off of each other, and oftentimes there's one clear winner, and most of the time it's Nintendo, and you've probably never heard of the other studio that Nintendo was in a little competition with.
Yeah,
but yeah, you didn't often see it internally like this.
Like, the only other example from this time period that I can think of would be Rare and Nintendo, even though Rare was kind of under Nintendo's umbrella at the time. You know, you would have things like Super Mario 64, Meet Banjo-Kazooie, Mario Kart 64, here's Diddy Kong Racing, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, but the Conker's Quest, it's kind of hard to explain what Conker's Quest is because none of us outside of Rare have actually played it, aside from maybe some people at an E3 or two in the late 90s. So yeah. Maybe it was at Space World too, I don't know. But Conker's Quest would have starred Conker, obviously, and Barry. The Barry was playable. And Barry was playable from the outset in Conker's Quest. Like, it wasn't like, as development went on, they decided to add a secondary character. No, Barry was announced when the game was announced that she would be one of the co-leads. And we just talked about Dinosaur Planet on the last episode and how Crystal originally had this co-lead role and wasn't just confined to essentially the prologue. And it was much the same here with Barry. And
I know Dinosaur Planet originally spun out of Diddy Kong Racing, ostensibly, as some sort of sequel or expansion to that. But it's kind of interesting to look at it and see just how many design similarities it shared at a high concept level with Conker's Quest. Having these two pro tags and having the little dino companion mechanic.
Yeah.
And having a lot of varied segments with, like, the little vehicle chase segments and varying up gameplay in areas like that. And it's like, a lot of this sounds familiar.
Yeah, and that's why, ultimately, this is what pushed me over the edge as late as last week, deciding we were just going to do a Conker spotlight, because it just felt appropriate jumping from Dinosaur Planet into discussing the evolution of Conker. And I do have to wonder, too, when they made the switch to Bad Fur Day and discarded a lot of this, how much of it was the Dinosaur Planet team then looking at all these discarded ideas and we're like, well, don't mind if we do. I mean, don't want to let a good idea go to waste. So who knows? But yeah, Conker and Barry were this. And Barry at this point, and we've like, I'm speaking like this version of Barry was never seen. She was in Pocket Tales, which we'll discuss too here. But this version of Barry was a lot different than the Barry we got in Bad Fur Day. She was a set. I mean, she was still a chipmunk, but she was more of Conker's stature, and she was, you know, younger. We haven't really spent much time with this version of Barry, but I don't want to just say she was Conker but a girl, but I mean, I'm sure there would have been personality differences between the two, but at
there
least...
There were certainly gameplay differences between
the two. Oh yeah, and we'll get into that. So, like I said, the early progress made by the team influenced the Banjo team, and then the Banjo team just like turned around and in very little time produced a Stone Cold masterpiece in Banjo-Kazooie, which then made the Conker team kind of work harder. And Conker's Quest was originally announced as having a December 1997 release date. At E3 97, they said, yeah, this game's coming out in December, which... You know, both like Banjo-Kazooie was announced as coming out in November, and like both release dates were way too optimistic. Like the famous story of the Banjo team literally being in tears behind the scenes of that E3 because they knew they would not be able to deliver this game when it was being promised, like having a nervous breakdown. Having the weight of being Nintendo's holiday release for that year on them and knowing they couldn't deliver in time. And so obviously what eventually happens is also at E3 97, a little game was being shown off to Shigeru Miyamoto and other Nintendo higher-ups called RC Pro-Am 64, starring Timber the Tiger, and... they loved it, and this was also going to be published by Rare, but probably not until 98. They didn't even show it off at E3, and Nintendo loved it, and they were like, you know, we'll talk, and then this guy, like, I don't know, like, how far along Pro-Am 64 was at E3 97, but obviously it was far enough along to eventually be released that November.
Yeah.
It required very little in the way of polishing.
It makes me think it was pretty far along.
Yeah, but I guess since Rare was publishing it, they felt like they were so high up on Conker that they're like, we want Conker to be our first published game. We're going to hold off on Pro-Am 64, probably not as marketable as Conker's Quest is going to be. But then it made me also just the close proximity to Mario Kart 64, which had come out in the West in February of 97. They're just like, you know, we'll let Mario Kart 64 have a holiday season before we kind of step on its toes a little bit. But when Banjo-Kazooie ultimately was delayed until 98, they realized, you know, we need to basically make this up to Nintendo. We don't want to sour this relationship we have with them. We need to deliver a big holiday game. And our Pro-Am 64 became Diddy Kong Racing. Nintendo licensed the character of Diddy Kong to Rare for the game. Also licensed the character of Banjo. And the alligator character became Crunch the Kremlin and also became owned by Nintendo as a result. But Diddy Kong Racing became this, not only this kind of stopgap holiday release that made up for the lack of Banjo-Kazooie, but also served as the introduction of the characters of Banjo and Conker. And so this was this was brilliant. And the fact that, I mean, this is like Marvel Studios level of kind of laying the groundwork for what's to come.
I guess it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean this is the kind of stuff like, oh, you know, we've got this project coming out, but we're going to plant the seeds for it in this project. It's going to be out first. I mean, this is the kind of shit Rare was doing. They were 20 years ahead of the game back in the late 90s. But yeah, Conker and Banjo essentially become de facto Donkey Kong franchise spin-off characters as a result. And
yeah. and not just them, though, the other characters that were pulled in from other games never actually got those other games.
Well, I mean, so. Pipsy is kind of a reworked Astro Mouse from that project. Mm. Obviously, who else?
Well, as we just found out the other day, Timber was actually being used for a project briefly before being made the star of what eventually became Diddy Kong Racing, and then was going to get his own game again later, but yeah. Then was further upstaged.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm still not quite clear if Tip Tup was always in Banjo-Kazooie, or if they just tied the name Tip Tup to a turtle that was already in Banjo-Kazooie. Or what the deal with Tip Tup is, but they made it all work.
Yeah, I'm still surprised Bumper never showed up in Bad Fur Day.
Oh, well,
it just seems really appropriate for that world.
The thing is, yeah, they did. I mean, the whole Bumper went to prison angle did come as a result of Conker. Conker Live and Reloaded. In the promotional material, Conker mentions that one of the Diddy Kong racers is in prison, and then we later learned from Rare that it was Bumper. So Bumper does have some ties to the Conker franchise as a result. The Conker franchise is what sullied his name, but yeah, if I have my way, Bumper will be the tipped up of the Conker franchise whenever we get a new game.
Yes, I'm working on it, okay?
You know, I think Bumper could be like Conker's driver in a sequence, like, you know, his getaway driver.
The Murray. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, and maybe even like Conker could be like, you know, I can use my kingly powers to kind of clear your name, you know, so clear all charges against you. So yeah,
help me get out of this and I can clear your name once I get back on the throne.
So anyway, you know, the effect of Banjo and Conker being, like, introduced in Diddy Kong Racing, I should point out, because this is also lost to history. Because people say, like, oh, you know, Banjo and Conker were guest characters. That's all they were. They were not Donkey Kong characters. And I'm like, no.
Heck that noise.
Just, you know, despite what logic might dictate 20 years after, Rare really was pushing Conker and Banjo-Kazooie as being in the same universe as Donkey Kong. And this is even evident in Conker's biography on the Rare website back in 1998. I'm going to read this to you verbatim, Gibbon, because I feel like you need to get the proper historical context for why DK Vine thinks in the way DK Vine thinks. And why, you know, anybody who came of age post buyout just doesn't get it. Doesn't remember what it was like. All right, so this is Conker's biography on Rare's website, 1998. And this is not attached to Diddy Kong Racing, by the way. This is his biography under the 12 Tales Conker 64 page. He may look cute, but don't let that fool you into thinking that Conker's adventuring skills don't match up to his enthusiasm. Just like his good friend Diddy, Conker is easily bored by the quiet daily routine of his treetop village, and he'll seize any chance to go bounding off into the woods with catapult in hand. He's as swift and athletic as any squirrel you'd care to name, and a crack shot with his weapon of choice, making him a formidable challenger to anyone who dares cross him.
Now, I have some questions about this paragraph.
Well, yeah, obviously. But, I mean, the fact that Diddy just casually name dropped in Conqueror's
Biography. Oh, that's not one of my questions. My question is, what treetop village are they talking
right.
about?
I obviously things evolved even like by the time of Pocket Tales.
It's funny that they say as any squirrel you'd care to name, because when Conqueror's Quest was first announced, you mentioned that you had a hard time picturing it as being related to Donkey Kong stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so did a lot of magazines, and particularly a few in Europe compared it to an existing series, Mr. Nuts, about a sort of red squirrel in shoes with a bit of an attitude who threw conkers at enemies and went through pastiches of movie worlds.
Oh my god.
I asked Chris Siever about it, and he's like, wait, what? I've never heard of this. What are you talking about?
So this was basically a Dante's Peak volcano situation. I was going to say Ants and Bugs Life, but that was actually Ants was intended to rip off Bugs Life as a little bit of sabotage.
I found at least three distinct magazine scans that mention Mr. Nuts in their thing, as well as one of the Conker's Bad Fur Day strategy guides.
See release?
It had two releases, one on the Super Nintendo and one on the Amiga, with an intended Genesis port, and it was got ports on the Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advanced. So it was going for a while.
Mr. Nuts has had more releases than Conker.
I'd have to count. But yeah.
Maybe they're tied. I don't know. When you factor in Big Reunion and Young Conker.
Yeah.
And then Diddy Kong Racing and iDarb.
It's only had two distinct entries, but it's had a lot of ports.
Okay. Well, then Conker still wins, because when you factor in Rare Replay, I think that pushes Conker over the edge. Anyway, so the whole vibe around this time, I guess, was that Diddy Kong Racing was out, introduces these two characters, and we don't really, like, we knew more about Banjo than we knew about Conker at this time, because Banjo was the game that was kind of, at this point, known it was closer to release. It was going to be coming out at one point spring 98, and then eventually, right into summer 98, end of June. So we kind of knew, and it's even evident in Diddy Kong Racing's instruction manual, because it like obviously name drops Banjo's future partnership with Kazooie, and I think gets a little bit more into specifics. Conker is vague and nebulous, and the only thing we kind of know about him is that he doesn't live on Timber's Island. He lives elsewhere. Presumably close, because he's recruited by Diddy Kong, a friend he made when Diddy and Donkey were off kind of exploring, and then they just happened to meet Conker. Hey, Conker. Hey, Squirrel. Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Diddy Kong. That's a great untold story that I would love to learn more about, that we will never learn about, because there's no way Nintendo would allow that story to be told. But when Donkey Kong ended, because in the Diddy Kong Racing instruction manual, it's mentioned that Donkey Kong met Conker too, right? Because at least Diddy met him while he was on an adventure with Donkey. So the implication is that Donkey Kong would know Conker.
I've been playing through Mr. Nuts 2 to see if any of the NPCs are unnamed apes or monkeys that I could point to and be like, look, it's them. Yes, of course I own all of those ports I just mentioned. What are you talking about?
I love that too, that Donkey and Diddy have these unseen adventures, like lower key adventures, right? Maybe zero stakes, but they just go off and like, we're gonna explore Willow Woods today. Let's go on a little mini vacation to Willow Woods. We're gonna spend the weekend in Willow Woods.
End up trapped in a crazy machine with nobody knows where they are.
Right. I mean, that's what sets up Donkey Country 3. Maybe this was like their do-over vacation after the Northern Cremosphere thing tits up. But they decided, like, well, let's go to Willow Woods. We'll have some acorn cider and just like kick back. And then they met Conker, and Conker at this point wasn't the reclusive shut-in that he eventually became. And a friendship.
Yeah, it's interesting how all this early material describes Conker as this real go-getter, ready to go out and go on adventures. And it's like,
yeah,
considering how all the other rare characters sort of aged up and became schlubs, it's amazing Diddy made out as well as he did.
I know, like, the Diddy Kong Racing cast, as we often like to point out, time was not kind to them. Aside from Diddy, who made out pretty well. He's lived a fairly charmed life in comparison, but, you know, between Conker and Bumper, Tip Top fathering like 20 some children, and then even the meta aspect of like Timber constantly getting games snatched from him, and yeah, mm-hmm. it's just a cursed cast all around. And Crystal's alternate identity in the Star Fox Command ending, not that cursed, but so anyway, 1998 rolled in. Banjo-Kazooie was kind of the big primary focus of the fandom, and I say the fandom, like, there's no DK Vine wasn't even around then. We were still like over a year away from being from launching. Oh, but
the Ur fandom days.
Like when I say the fandom, I assume this nebulous, rare Donkey Kong universe fandom that was existing in corners online. Like, maybe people were pointing out connections. Like, I mean, I got online in 98 permanently, so I know I was ranting about this shared universe on the Nintendo Insider forums, but
I was late to the technology game, so I was not involved in any of this.
That's funny, because I consider you the tech guy now. But yeah, so Banjo-Kazooie was the focus, but in 98, that's when Conker's Quest became... It's so hard to say Conker's Quest, because I'm so used to saying 12 Tales Conker 64, which is what it was rebranded as in 1998. And according to Rare, they were afraid of market confusion with games like Command & Conquer. Conquer, of course, C-O-N-Q-U-E-R. And other games around this time that used the homophone Conquer. They were afraid somehow this game, Conquer's Quest, spelled completely differently, would get confused with those. I don't know, but they...
Yeah.
You know, they eventually settled on 12 Tales Conquer 64 as like, which is a weird name, because Conquer's Quest at least signifies exactly what you're getting. Oh, there's this character named Conquer, and this is his quest. Where 12 Tales is more flowery. It's kind of abstract. Like, 12 Tales? What? Like, even to this day, I don't think it's quite clear what the 12 tales were, except that we know that the game was going to be structured as in kind of these archetypes. So you would have a Wild West tale, you would have an Ancient Greece tale, you would have, I think, a dinosaur tale.
Yeah, it's what eventually shook out as the chapters in Bad Fur Day.
yeah, where... Instead of taking from very familiar kind of storybook archetypes, they went more with movie parodies instead. But this is also an inspiration, a clear inspiration for the upcoming game Clive and Wrench, and which of course has an appearance by Trouser the Snake from Off a Ukulele. Ergo, it is DKU. And
who
so,
in turn just made a cameo appearance in the wonderful Anton Ball. Go buy it.
Anton Ball Deluxe, actually.
You're right. Sorry. My bad.
We don't want to confuse it with Command and Anton Ball.
Yeah. Don't want to get the lawyers riled up.
You know, and the big selling point, I remember 98, the big discussion, like Conker would eventually appear, like, oh, Rare's website is updating with new screenshots from 12 Tales Conquer 64. Nintendo Power has an update on 12 Tales Conquer 64. EGM Magazine, that's Electronic Gaming Monthly, they have a little preview of 12 Tales. So, you know, it would keep popping up throughout 98. And I remember the big selling point of 12 Tales at this time was, and because each Rare game from this era had a selling point, a technological selling point. Donkey Kong Country and Killer Instinct and Ken Griffey Jr.'s winning run had ACM graphics, advanced computer modeling, right? Diddy Kong Racing is lesser known, but it's something they really bandied about back in 97. It was called RDA technology. RDA technology was a graphical editing system that, to quote Rare, offers an unprecedented level of creative control to each and every team member, which is just jargon. That doesn't really help me, but I know RDA, the technology was attributed to the way the racers would kind of react to each other. Whenever they would get passed, or like they would react and turn their head in different ways, which, you know, Mario Kart 8 has entire memes dedicated to it. But Diddy Kong Racing, coming the same year as Mario Kart 64, that was pretty fucking cool shit to see, you know.
That's true. Rare so often preempts things Nintendo does later and gets all the credit for it.
Yeah, like everything in Mario Kart. But somehow still less than Diddy Kong Racing offers. So that was RDA technology. Yeah. And the whole, like, characters reacting to what's happening spun out into Conker in a major, major way. Because the big selling point of Conker to these news magazines of the day was that 12 Tales was the game that was going to be an interactive cartoon, and it would heavily showcase the facial animations for both Conker and Barry, and they would show, like, happiness, enthusiasm, despair, not only them but also the enemies in the game. So everything would, like, interact.
All that stuff that Nintendo got the credit for when they did it later in Wind Waker on the next console.
Yes. Now, this is something that obviously remained bedrock in the game, even with the dramatic changes to come. Conker's facial animations are really held up, and they're really amazing on the N64. When you look at Bad Fur Day and you compare it to Super Mario 64, they're kind of like the two pillars of the system. I know Bad Fur Day wasn't the final release for the Nintendo 64, but it might as well be, because it is kind of the high end of what you can do graphically with the system. And you compare it to Super Mario 64, and they don't even feel like they're in the same orbit. It's just, they're like different entities entirely. And
it's kind of amazing.
This whole, like, expressive animation, it was publicly given as the reason why the game was so frequently delayed. Like, Rare pointed, like, hey, this is taking a lot of time. I don't know how true that is. I feel like it might have been a face-saving excuse for why Conker what kept getting pushed back. Remember, this game was promised in December 97, and then by the end of 98, there was still no concrete release date. It was kind of just, it kept getting pushed back and pushed back. And, you know, I don't know how much you can speak to this, Gibbon, but from what I gather, it was just, the team was dissatisfied with how things were shaking out, and they really couldn't find the same hook to really hang everything on that Banjo-Kazooie quickly found.
from stuff I've read about it, it seemed like the tech was there and they had some worlds and stuff you could do up and running, but there wasn't a lot of, like, it wasn't very cohesive. There wasn't really anything bringing it all together and making it a whole. Like the anecdote that gets passed around about part of the transition into Bad Fur Day was Seaver just sort of ad-libbing lines, Milo and Otis style, to one of their little collectible scenarios in the game, and it all spiraling out of control from there. So, yeah, I definitely get that sort of, we're not quite sure what we actually want to do with this now that we've got the meat of it here.
Yeah, and the meat is interesting to me. It's funny to me how there was some anticipation for 12 Tales Conquer 64. I remember, like, there are obviously fans, and there was a small but vocal contingent of people who were absolutely heartbroken when it became Bad Fur Day. I think they were, like, probably too young to actually buy Bad Fur Day, so it was kind of like, we have been robbed.
We sure were. We've been looking
for. I was 17 when Bad Fur Day came out, so I was just at the right age.
2001, I would have been 14 or 15 or so. Yeah. Oh, I would have just turned, like, yeah, around there.
Yeah.
So, not too far behind you. But yeah.
I always feel like you're older than me. I feel like you're 45. Just because you carry yourself in such a mature way, Gibbon. That's not me. You've got your life together, whereas I am...
No, I just hide it better.
I'm a Donkey Kong journalist, so what the fuck?
Yeah,
the fuck,
and I'm on your staff, so what, what do you want?
Have some cheese nips. So I understand why people were disappointed, but I remember, like, you know, during the, you know, time period itself, 12 Tales Conquer 64 was not really a game that people were looking forward to the extent that they were already looking forward to Banjo-Tooie and the eventual Donkey Kong game, which hadn't even been announced in 98. And we all knew it was coming, but I think, you know, Lee Loveday on Rare's website was even open with the fact that, yeah, we're working on it. Of course, Rare's working on Donkey Kong. But it hadn't been officially announced yet. But I remember, like, hardcore Rare fans and those of us who were making the connections, you know, Conker debuted in Diddy Kong Racing. He's a Donkey Kong spinoff character. Those of us who were thinking in those galaxy brain terms,
and we were excited. 12 Tales Go ahead.
We were excited about 12 Tales, but there was this dismissive attitude at the time, too, which really started cropping up in 98, where magazines like the aforementioned EGM would always derisively refer to Conker as, like, oh, more cute stuff from Rare. Like, keep in mind, too, that this was a year after Rare had released GoldenEye 007. So you were seeing, like, Rare was held in high esteem by everyone, except maybe hardcore Nintendo partisans who were accusing them of just copying Nintendo concepts. But you didn't really get that until closer to the beginning of the buyout era, when Nintendo fans were looking for an excuse to shit on Rare. But you were seeing this divide in Rare fandom. And I don't even think Rare fandom really existed in the same terms that it does today. Because nowadays, Rare fans are all friendly with each other. Like, oh, you're a Perfect Dark fan. Well, okay. What I mean is, I'm thinking in terms of, like, the big Rare fan sites are really allied.
That's true.
DK Vine, Rare Thief, Rare Gamer, on down to Golden Sands blog post. You have a little bit of division with, like, the people who are just Sea of Thieves fans, but I think the older Rare fans who have been around, we've all kind of come together. But 97, 98, you had fans of Rare's first-person shooters And then you had fans of Rare's cutesy, and I said cutesy, they're never really cutesy.
Yeah.
That was the term that was bandied around by the FPS fans, but fans of Rare's animal mascot games. And, you know, things like Blastcore and other things would kind of fall, you know, through the cracks a little bit. They wouldn't really have a home in either fandom. Those were the two major pillars of Rare fandom. And we didn't really get along. Like, RareNet was the big Rare fan site before DK Vine and Rare Extreme and some of the other sites that cropped up around the turn of the millennium. Rare Witch Project, you know. But RareNet was like the grandfather of Rare fan sites, the one that was held in high esteem by Rare and everyone. And RareNet had an obvious preference for the first-person shooter games, and coverage kind of sort of dried up a little bit for things like Banjo-Kazooie, and they would keep talking about, like, when Perfect Dark was announced, all their focus was on Perfect Dark. And it was just kind of like, yeah, but Rare's also got 16 other games coming out.
What were their thoughts on Tui with all of its FPS segments?
Honestly, I probably tuned out RareNet by that point. Like, because that was like a year into DK Vine. But yeah, we being dumb kids who were trying to make a name for ourselves, we were definitely like, we viewed RareNet as the enemy, which is laughable now. And now when I say Rare fans have come together, I mean, you don't see that today. Like, DK Vine has a general love and appreciation for GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. Now, it's not like, oh, this thing that Rare is making is taking away from projects that Rare could be making that I want to see. It's, you know, you don't get that from us nowadays. You get that from other fans, sure, like, oh, Rare's doing Everwild, but what about Banjo 3? I want that. But anyway,
you mean Banjo 5e?
You know, Mr. Nuts 6e? I think that this divide in the Rare fandom at the time, though, was really illustrated by the video game journalists, the Gen Xers who were kind of running these video game magazines of the day, because this was also the era of the PlayStation 1. And gaming had kind of finally been accepted as more than just something for kids. The college-age crowd was now really into gaming. And so they would be covering all these big releases on the original PS. And stuff like 12 Tales Conqueror 64 outside of Nintendo propaganda outlets or Rare's own website would often be kind of covered with a smirk. Referred to as... It wouldn't be overtly negative, but there would always be disclaimers and little asides here and there to just let you know, like, yeah, we know this looks like kiddie garbage, but, you know, it looks impressive, and you know, Rare's done some good stuff in the past, haha. But there was this sense of unease about 12 Tales as a result. I remember, because being a teenager in high school in 1998, a younger teenager in 98, but still a teenager, I remember feeling a little defensive about looking forward to 12 Tales because you had this kind of dismissive attitude towards it from the major publications and even things like RareNet. And
I was getting picked on anyway, so it was fine.
I was on board with it because, one, it was part of the DKU. I don't even know if I was using the term DKU at the time, but it was part of that. But two, I also trusted Rare. Rare hadn't really steered me wrong, even with the games that I didn't really get into, like Blastcore. I still kind of like them, so I was looking forward to 12 Tales, but it did feel like I'm gonna have to kind of keep this one little bit on the down low, right? Like, I'm not gonna be telling my IRL friends that I'm playing this game, because there was the stigma attached to it. Rightly or wrongly, and I'm going to say wrongly, it just felt like this desperate need for gaming to be accepted as something adults can do, they really took it out on things like Conquer. Whereas nowadays, you don't see that as much. And granted, I say that as a man in his 30s who is just past it all and has kind of embraced, you know, accepting yourself and, you know, people love what they love and more power to us all. And I'm just past this petty junior high bullshit. But I think that this very, like, pubescent era of gaming where it was it was maturing into this pastime for adults just as much as it was for kids, it was hard for a game like Conquer to really assert itself in a comfortable way without running into these divisive opinions. And if it was somebody like Nintendo publishing, I think Nintendo had enough of an accepted pedigree that they could have gotten away with it. But you wouldn't really see Nintendo do something overtly in the style of Western animation. So I think without that hook for Japanophiles, Conquer was just a hard sell and becoming harder by the year. But looking at like the vision they had for 12 Tales Conquer 64, I am intrigued by a lot of it. And especially the difference in gameplay between Conquer and Barry.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing I lament losing with Bad Fur Day, because I don't mourn 12 Tales all that much. I'm intrigued by it. I would love to play a working ROM of it. But
yeah,
the truth is, like, it's just kind of like Dinosaur Planet. I'm content with what we got, ultimately. And so I don't have this great unsatiated curiosity when it comes to what came before. Because I feel like, you know, both Dinosaur Planet and 12 Tales, what we got was ultimately the project they were always supposed to be. And I'm not going to really do the whole grass is greener on the other side bullshit when we've got perfectly great games already.
Oh, for sure. And I don't necessarily, I wouldn't say mourn 12 Tales so much as I lament some aspects of it, like you were saying, that didn't make it through to Bad Fur Day. Like, some of the areas they showed off.
For sure.
Look pretty cool, and some of those set pieces I wish we would have gotten to play through at some point, and as you mentioned, the differing play styles for the different characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, Conquer's side of the game was said to be more arcade-like, and it would rely on physical attacks. Obviously, Conquer's slingshot, I think, was going to play a much larger role in this build of the game, and we would see that at the forefront in Pocket Tales. But Barry, on the other hand, this is where it sounds really interesting. Barry's was said to be more strategy-based, and Barry would have a little purple dinosaur companion who looks very familiar to those of us who are traumatized by certain aspects of Bad Fur Day. But Barry's little purple
dinosaur. Rest in peace, little buddy.
Oh, Bloopy. The little purple dino would essentially do. Barry wasn't a fighter. The dinosaur would do the attacks for Barry so long as Barry kept him well fed and content. And that to me,
Nibla.
Yeah, Nibla from Donkey Kong Country 3. That to me is very interesting. It also, you mentioned Dinosaur Planet, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Tricky and how you had to keep Tricky well fed or else he would just ignore you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, I know they were different teams working on those games, but again, it's like, this sounds very familiar.
For sure, yeah. Conquer would have also had an owl companion who I think it's now been established the owl's name was Know It.
Yes.
K-N-O-W-I-T, all one word. and know it would have been used in a two-player co-op mode. So it's interesting to me the two-player co-op mode wasn't Conker and Barry, it was Conker and Know It the Owl. I'm not sure how that would have worked, but the fact that there was two-player co-op...
I imagine it'd be kind of be similar to how Bowser Jr. works in Bowser's Fury, where the second player
I don't know what that is.
Oh, the new Mario game that just came out has a side, like, not full game called Bowser's Fury as sort of like an add-on, which is a big open world thing. But Bowser Jr. accompanies Mario around this big open world. And normally he's AI controlled, and you can direct him a little bit to, like, go interact with various environmental spots, or maybe go bop some enemies or pick up some coins or whatever for you. Or someone can pick up a second controller and control Bowser Jr. to do all that manually.
Mario, the guy from the arcade Donkey Kong game, he has his own game
now?
Yeah,
I know, right? We've come a long way. They keep doing these really deep pulls.
No, I've heard of Bowser's Fury. I'm just an asshole. So anyway, two-player co-op mode is something I also would have been interested to see in Bad Fur Day, just because I love co-op. And this has been the case. This has been the way I've been wired since I played Super Mario Brothers, and I hated that Mario and Luigi were in this, like, weird competition with each other when they should have been serving the same purpose. Like, this is why I love two-player team in Donkey Kong Country, and why Sea of Thieves is one of my favorite games, because I can crew up with my friends from around the world and go on an adventure together. And so mm-hmm. I'm always about two-player co-op or four-player co-op or 12-player co-op. Just give me all my friends everywhere, and we'll team up together for a good time. But you know, Conker's Bad Fur Day is known as, like, this very like the actual story, not the multiplayer, but it's known as a single player experience. So having a two-player version of that is tantalizing to me, to say the least. But also interesting, and we talk about teams reusing ideas, one of the selling points of 12 Tales was, and I quote from an EGM article from around the era, a variety of vehicles scattered throughout the world that can be used in the game's 3D environment. So nuts and bolts before nuts and bolts? I don't know.
We've seen a little bit about that. I think all told, there's about 40 minutes of footage floating around that's been compiled on YouTube. And we've seen Conker on, like, a hoverboard, which later obviously made it into Bad Fur Day. But we've also seen him, like, flying around on, like, a glider / kite. And, mm-hmm. like, riding around on the barrel, not just in the one little area, but, like, around an entire, like, Wild West section.
Yeah.
And some various other bits and bumps. So, yeah.
We also see it in one of the screenshots, an anthropomorphic train.
Yeah, that's true. Googly-eyed train.
Googly-eyed train. And it's funny because, you know, in the Banjo-Tooie Spotlight series that Cameron and I recorded at the end of last year, we talked how interesting it was Chuffy the train was just a train and wasn't, like, a living anthropomorphic character. But here in 12 Tales Conker 64, we would have gotten just that. And it was just a hideous color scheme, too. Red, green and yellow is the paint scheme on this train, with big googly eyes on the front and a smiley face. But also in this build of Conker, we would still have multiplayer death matches.
Yeah,
and there's a screenshot that Rare released back in 98, and I swear I can't make heads or tails, pocket tails of this, but It looks like it's four Conkers fighting each other in, like, this hilly area, and it looks
like that is indeed what it looks like.
It looks like one of the Conkers has been decapitated, because I see its head flying through the air.
I don't know about that.
No, that's the way it's always looked to me since 1998. And I remember...
Conker did have a big cartoony haymaker attack in this build, so...
I remember showing this to my friend Elliot, who, even at this point, I could feel him kind of pulling away from the concept of the DKU, which is why I, like, had to go online and find new people. But, like, I was trying to, like, I guess justify to him, like, look how badass 12 Tails Conker 64 looks. You can decapitate each other. Whoa! So even then, like, my going into high school, very like exposed self was trying to find ways to justify that 12 Tails Conker 64 wasn't just cutesy cartoony stuff for babies. No, this was a game that had some edge to it. And that's the thing too, like Banjo-Kazooie had cartoony characters, but it was also, if not risque, it definitely had an attitude to it that kind of made it go down smoother. Like, I mean, there's a joke in there about shoving the ice key up Mumbo's asshole. And so...
Not to mention all the lewd, grunty jokes.
Right. Yeah, some shocking jokes in those Brentilda clues. So, like, it felt like Banjo-Kazooie had that edge to it that made the cartoony environment feel more palatable when you were kind of an awkward teenager who wanted to fit in desperately.
And yeah, but like, none of that would have been apparent prior to the game coming out, so I don't know why people weren't giving Conker the benefit of the doubt here either.
I think it just looked cute. Like, I think the very heavily Western animation style cartoon characters, which, you know, I mentioned Tex Avery, but a lot of these screenshots look more Walt Disney in flavor, if not execution. So I think there was just this general like attitude that Conker is for kids and Banjo-Kazooie is for adolescents and teenagers. And so this shit, it's like laughable to me as an adult because it doesn't matter. But when you're worried about, you know, fitting in and you want the things you like to be liked by other people, like that matters to you, then this stuff does weigh on you a little bit. And it obviously weighed on journalists too, who like, oh, I work for a video game magazine. I'd rather talk about the edited nude Raider pictures of Lara Croft that are online. That was an actual article in EGM, by the way, I think in 1998.
Yeah, I remember that article.
We'd rather talk about nude Raider, the website nude Raider. Good lord, 98, what the fuck? We were talking about that other... Yeah, and we have this cartoon squirrel we want to talk about. No, video games is for adults, man. I don't know. It's funny to me, but looking at these screenshots...
Sure, it's not GoldenEye, but at the same time, like, it's a video game. Go have fun. Come on.
I think, you know, that attitude is reflective of the year 2021 and you being a man in his 30s. And, you know, you're an adult who doesn't really care about this bullshit anymore. But in 1998, where the culture was veering, where video game magazines were running, like, oh, here's this website where you can look at Lara Croft's photoshopped polygonal breast.
Look, yeah. The triangles are beige now.
I mean, the culture was wildly different, and you definitely
not get... so different. You still see people shitting all over, like, say, Young Conker, based on the look of it, and not paying any attention to the actual content. Granted, the actual content's hard to see, but...
I would argue, though, that Young Conker is more a knee-jerk reaction to hating on anything that looks stylistically different from what we know before because of this weird panic about nuts and bolts, which is just it's people not looking at things on their own merit, and which we were guilty of too, you know, when Young Conker was shown off. But
who's this we? Come on, leave me out of
the royal we. I'm already thinking in kingly terms because we're talking about Bad Fur Day. Come on now. Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's I would say, though, that I think 2021, the modern era compared to 20 years ago, is more forward thinking in some regards, and definitely what people play and what they like is one of those. Like, it's even reflective in the lineup of, you know, Xbox Studios now versus when the Xbox first launched. And you know, you made mention earlier about how, you know, Rare was kind of an awkward fit when they first joined Microsoft, and now they're not. And now, weirdly, even though like they've moved on a little bit to things like Sea of Thieves, their whole library of IPs feels more at home because Xbox has diversified. There's now games for everyone, and like we've gotten past that awkward stage in the development of gaming and gaming culture where it's like, no, games are for adults. It's a mature, sophisticated like form of entertainment for A, B, and C reasons. And to illustrate that, we're gonna lean hardcore into beige violence and gratuitous cheesecake. And you know, but I will say, though, that, you know, looking at these screenshots of 12 Tales, I'm impressed with just how, like, this is the most beautiful, Bad Fur Day too, but even at this stage in 98, this game is the most beautiful Nintendo 64 game I've ever seen.
Yeah. And yeah, even just these few screenshots we're taking a look here in the dock, Conker's so expressive.
Conker is expressive. The environments are colorful. You've got like this level of detail with the character models that, you know, in a lot of like it doesn't even look that polygonal. Like,
yeah,
things are smooth and rounded. And but it's interesting, you know, you got the Cyclops in this ancient Rome sequence, and he very much resembles Bugga the Nut.
He sure does.
And you have to wonder how much of this was recycled eventually. Some stuff is obvious, like maybe the Cyclops, but then you see like screenshots of Conker in the prehistoric world, and there's all these little dinos similar to that sequence at the beginning of The Lost World, Jurassic Park, where, with like the rich family on the secluded beach. And you've got Conker, like, I completely forgot about this screenshot of Conker coming face to face with a polar bear.
And, yeah, and like, there's
an Arctic region at some point.
Mm-hmm. There's Arctic region. There's a Wild West region. There was this sort of African Jurassic Park-y type area. There was the windmill area, obviously. There was K.O. the Cat's castle. Mm-hmm. There was just so much that we just didn't end up seeing.
Yeah.
So,
and also Conker would have a different hat for every environment. Yeah. So, you know, in ancient Greece, he would be wearing like a Spartacus helmet, like in the Jurassic Park / like adventure area, he would have like a pith helmet or pith hat, cowboy hat.
Little beanie when he's talking to this train.
Yeah, the beanie. Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued, and I thought the game looked beautiful, and I was obviously looking forward to it, but we had so much to look forward to. Like, 98 is when they announced Banjo-Tooie, we knew Donkey Kong was coming, There's a lot going on in the culture of Rare fandom in the Donkey Kong universe back then. But, you know, development was moving along. It was now 12 Tales Conquer 64. We were promised it was coming soon. Everything was happy. And Rare even announced a Game Boy counterpart called Conker's Pocket Tales that would kind of serve as the Donkey Kong Land to 12 Tales Conquer 64's Donkey Kong Country. And it should be pointed out that Pocket Tales wasn't really being made in coordination with the 12 Tales team. It was, and the fact that they were being developed concurrently as opposed to like the Donkey Kong Land games, which were basically done after the Super Nintendo version of Donkey Kong Country was complete and shipped and out, then the Donkey Kong Land teams would come in and kind of craft the Game Boy counterpart to that, the semi-sequel to it. Pocket Tales was being done concurrently, so they were taking like aspects of 12 Tales and like reimagining them.
On one hand, it has been funny at times to poke like Chris Evert and go, "Hey, can you tell us about this person from Pocket Tales?" and have him go, "Who in the living fuck?" but also it's this nice little what if window into this world of like, this is what they had to work with from 12 Tales at the time when they were making this and translate it into a Game Boy game. And it's kind of fascinating sort of getting that sort of snapshot in this form.
Yeah. And it's funny because this was supposed to be like this game that would come out a little bit after 12 Tales Conquer 64 to ride any hype that game had. And it would also be published by Rare. So, you know, further revenue in their coffers. But then it sort of became an artifact of this era, like the only like released bit of Conker from this era. So things like Honker the Skunk and Acorn People, they're held up as like this huge part of Conker of this era when they're not really a part of 12 Tales. It's just
the Acorn People were, but they were only in like one area of the game.
yeah,
they weren't, but like the major inhabitants of the world.
They had like the Acorn People have this outsized importance in Pocket Tales.
Yeah.
Honker the Skunk is basically Conker's Wario, his Waluigi, and
More his Shadow the Hedgehog.
He's the dark counterpart to Conker. And so when Conker's Pocket Tales came out, you know, we were like, oh, finally we've got some concrete info on Conker's world. He lives in Willow Woods, which is inhabited by the Acorn People, and he's got this great rivalry with Honker the Skunk, who framed him for murder.
Yeah, by the way, this like a cartoon, absurd shit happens in this game.
So yeah, like, Conker's Pocket Tales was not supposed to come out first, but what happened was, the handheld team made Conker's Pocket Tales for the original Game Boy, and 12 Tales Conquer 64 was still not ready. And so they were just like, well, I guess we might as well remake it for the Game Boy Color while we're waiting for 12 Tales to come out. So they made a Game Boy Color version, and then 12 Tales was still not ready. So
and then they released both of them.
Yeah.
On the same cart.
Here's two versions of the same game on the same cartridge. Although they're like structured the same, they are wildly different. In actuality.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how different they are.
Yeah, so you get two games for the price of one, assuming you have both original Game Boy hardware, either like the Game Boy Pocket, or the Super Game Boy, or you have a Game Boy Color, and then you can play that version. But I prefer the Game Boy version. I think it is a little bit more polished, even if it's...
It is, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you've got archaic things like save points.
Yeah, but... and the boss AI is completely broken on the Game Boy Color version.
Yeah.
The Game Boy Color version is actually more buggy and less polished.
Yeah, and it's a shame that the Game Boy Color version is all that people play today. Because I would say, like, to people who have tried out Conker's Pocket Tales, but have only played the Game Boy Color version. Now, seek out the Game Boy ROM if you can find it. I don't even know, like, how the ROM works, if, like...
Yeah, because the way it boots is it detects hardware and then boots the most current version the hardware supports and doesn't give you an option. So if you want to play the Game Boy version, you have to be playing it on like a Game Boy or a Game Boy Pocket or a Super Game Boy.
Yeah, you
can't play it on a Game Boy Color or a Game Boy Advance or what have you.
Yeah, and it's funny because like even like wanting to refresh my memory and maybe like pulling up a YouTube walkthrough, there are no YouTube walkthroughs of the original Game Boy version. It's all the Game Boy Color. So anyway, Now, this isn't a Conker's Pocket Tales spotlight, but I feel like Conker's Pocket Tales is essential to this discussion because Rare was like, fuck it, let's just release Conker's Pocket Tales. We've got two versions of the same game just sitting on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Let's get it out, and then this can be Conker's debut. So the game that was merely made to support the big Conker game became Conker's... The Conker franchise's debut, right? Not the character of Conker's debut, but the franchise's first game was Conker's Pocket Tales. And I am so thankful for this because I feel like as much as I love what they did with Bad Fur Day, Bad Fur Day would have had no impact or would have had much lesser impact with me had we not gotten this glimpse of Conker's world before the corruption set in.
Yeah, we actually get to see that journey from adventurous, happy-go-lucky youth to washed-up alcoholic schlub Rare loves to do that we wouldn't have context for without Pocket Tales.
Apparently it only takes 15 months to get to that point. Life comes at you fast.
I mean, shit can happen. Look at the last 15 months of our lives.
Oh shit, you brought me down. I know Chris Seaver will say Conker's Pocket Tales is not canon, but Chris Seaver would also say Diddy Kong Racing is not canon. So with all due respect to Chris Seaver, DK Vine definitely views Pocket Tales as canon because it is a
released
Conker product.
He also says
Conker
16, so...
Yeah, right, yeah. It, just like George Lucas, he's got some unique ideas about his own property that I think ultimately... You just got to roll with the way it was presented. Like, oh yeah, you didn't mean for Han to shoot first. Well, tough, because that's what was released, and that's the way the story was presented to us, and that's the way. Like,
I can't believe they're still doing Star Wars edits. You know, the version released on Disney Plus is a new edit.
Yeah, I know, and Greedo says something like McClunky.
McClunky.
Anyway, like I know I like differ from Chris Seaver in opinions on Conker, and a big part of that is because my introduction to Conker was Diddy Kong Racing and Conker's Pocket Tales, much to Chris Seaver's chagrin with what Conker eventually became. But and you know, I think Pocket Tales too. You know, it's not a great game in the same way that Banjo-Kazooie is a great game.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Or in the same way that Bad Fur Day is a great game for what it does. But I think it is a game I have an undying fondness for. And part of that is because it is weird. It's like this game of telephone that the handheld team was playing with the 12 Tales team, and this was like them reinterpreting what the 12 Tales team was doing, and because of that, we get this glimpse of Conker's world pre-Bad Fur Day. And actually, yeah, it is an origin story for how Conker and Barry go from friends to lovers, because the implication is that after the events of Pocket Tales, it ends with them kind of holding hands, you know, on a lake. Having a moment, realizing, oh. You know, and
I also appreciate how Pocket Tales further cements the Donkey Kong connection in various places.
Yeah, armies appear. The armadillos appear in
Slippas.
Yeah, I guess Slippas. It's more nebulous, but those are definitely armies rolling around in Pocket Tales. Basically, the handheld team made two games while they were still waiting for the 12 Tales team to deliver. And in fact, 99, you know, Pocket Tales came out in the summer of 99. 99 was also when Chris Seaver was diverted away from Conker to help finish Donkey Kong 64, because there was this the ramshackle development of Donkey Kong 64. They had to get it out the door for November. It was Nintendo's big holiday game. They couldn't just pull the shit, like, here's Diddy Kong Racing 2. Here you go. Like, they didn't have any cards up their sleeves this time around. So it had to be done. And so this was, I think, this would become more commonplace during the Xbox era, but they pulled from other teams. And so Chris Seaver helped out with Donkey Kong 64, taking time away from Conker's development. And as an aside, apparently Chris Seaver made more money on what little contributions he made to Donkey Kong 64 than he did for the entirety of Conker's Bad Fur Day, just based on residuals. Donkey Kong 64 sold so much that Chris Seaver made more bank on that than he did on Conker.
The curse of Donkey Kong just outselling everything else a studio does.
Yeah, I imagine it, you know, it's disheartening in a way.
Curse in air quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wiping tears with pool of money.gif.
Hey, I'm not part of the problem, because I'm the one who was like, yeah, Conker is part of the Donkey Kong universe. I'll buy that too.
Yeah, I was always looking forward to 12 Tales, because it was one of the games they spotlighted for like 5 seconds on the Banjo-Kazooie VHS. And I was like, oh, hey, that's Conker from Diddy Kong Racing. He's getting his own game, too. This is going to be amazing. Look how great Banjo-Kazooie turned out. And I didn't keep up with the transition, so I don't think I quite put two and two together with 12 Tales and Bad Fur Day until later. So I think somewhere in the back of my head, I was like, huh, I guess I just missed 12 Tales coming out.
Yeah.
Because I was living in, like, podunk nowhere, where access to news and internet was limited, so.
Yeah, because it's funny you thought that, because the rumors and innuendo really started kicking up as 1999 became 2000. Because the rumors started circulating that Conker was canceled, because it had been, at that point, almost 3 years since the game was announced. And, well, 3 years seems like a drop in a bucket in today's terms of development. I mean, you know, we've got indie titles which have been in development. Seriously. Something like Lobo Destroyo has been stuck in development hell. And, you know, but 3 years, especially when, you know, its contemporary, Banjo-Kazooie, had been out for almost 2 years at that point, and its sequel was announced as coming out later that year, and it's like suddenly like, well, where's Conker? What happened to Conker? And, you know, we had started DK Vine at that point. We launched it in August of 99, and it was a reference point in early DK Vine was how delayed Conker was. And it was a running joke, like, Conker is so delayed, are we ever going to see Conker? And I never gave up the faith. I was like, it's not going to be canceled, because Rare doesn't cancel games. I'm looking at the camera right now, the non-existent camera that's filming me, doing the gym from the office space. Like, it just, you know, because obviously we would get so many canceled Rare games over the next few years.
Yeah, we just didn't hear about the canceled Rare games right. at this point.
But at this point, it was this reliable thing. If Rare announced the game, we were going to get that game. So I wasn't worried, but it was like other outlets like IGN were speculating, has Conquer been canceled? And that made me nervous just because I didn't want there to be this perception that Conquer is canceled. Again, I really cared what other people thought back then.
Mm.
And then other rumors started being bandied around, also by the likes of IGN. And the rumor that really started kicking into gear as winter started to thaw into spring in the year 2000 was that 12 Tales wasn't canceled, but it was being reworked. It was being reworked into something new. And on, I don't know how prescient we actually were, or if we were just insecure teenagers who, again, we're trying to justify looking forward to Conquer, but we were making jokes that Conquer was being reworked into an M-rated game where Conquer would wield a chainsaw and go on a murdering rampage. And
I want proof. I want you to link me to a forum post that shows you shooting the shit about this crazy idea.
I will have to dig through. This was on the website proper. This predated the actual DK Bank forum, but I would probably go on a deep diving spelunking through old HTML files, and I would probably find the actual source of it. But eventually, I think we had the title first. The title was leaked that it was going to be Conker's Bad Fur Day. And that conjured up some ideas. And I remember at this point we had an edited image of Conker wearing a hockey mask, like a la Jason Voorhees in the latter Friday the 13th sequels. But the idea like Conker was gonna like lose his mind and become a serial killer or something, like That was our, when we heard the name Conker's Bad Fur Day, it's like Conker is going to be Breaking Bad, essentially. And, you know, we were pretty far off, but I don't think we would have seriously considered how close we actually were. Because, you know, this was the year 2000, and the popular culture in the late 1990s and early 2000s, well, given, I don't need to tell you, I don't think it's aged that well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all relative, right? And you've got to have perspective of how culture evolves in the first place. But this was the era of Jerry Springer. This was the era of early South Park. And this was the era of the WWF Attitude era with, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, D-Generation X, and Suck It and whatnot, and gratuitous TNA, just kind of this trashy, very, very, like, lacking in decorum, not politically correct. And this was kind of viewed as, if not acceptable in all, like,
this is the era that made Donald Trump famous.
Well, that was the 80s. That was the greed is good era, which is completely repulsive in a whole different way. But yeah, the 90s, the late 90s into the early 2000s, it was generally like pushing taboos and but not in a way that's really admirable looking back. It's I'm trying to be diplomatic here, if you can't tell. I'm not trying to like throw the baby out with the bathwater. Dead baby jokes were also very in vogue at this time.
This is when like Frog in the Blender was a thing.
Because
this
like
is when Jackass was on television.
Jackass, yeah. It was basically, it felt like there were no taboos anymore. Like, the George Carlin's, like, words you can't say on television, thrown out the window. With the advent of cable TV and the internet slowly gaining, you know, mainstream acceptance, and it just felt like our culture drank several Red Bulls and popped some uppers and just went out clubbing, and it was chaos. I think I did that
a few times.
I don't know if 9/11 sort of tempered this a little bit, or if it didn't really come about until later in the mid-aughts. But culture evolved. I think comedy evolved to out of this era into being like more boundary pushing a little bit. And ultimately, I feel like we've come back from all of this and we've struck a better balance today, where it's a more compassionate balance, where things aren't punching down so much, and we're kind of being a little bit more thoughtful with our comedy and the way we kind of present our media and popular culture. By and large, I mean, obviously there are corners of that that push back against it, but I'm just saying all of this to point out the headspace we are all in during this time period.
yeah, it's kind of hard to describe if you weren't like our age during it. So
yeah, and the thing is, I was exactly the right age for this, because I was 16 years old in the year 2000. I'm fucking old as shit, but being a 16-year-old in the year 2000 and being surrounded by all of this imagery and all of this almost like manic trashiness.
Yeah.
It definitely had an effect on me and my friends. And
yeah, same. Yeah,
I mean, I'm not trying to make apologies for any sins I've made along the way because of when I was at a formative age and the culture I was in, but it has an effect. It definitely does. I mean, if, you know, when your parents say, you know, well, if your friend jumped off a bridge, would you do it too? If all of my friends are jumping off a bridge, yes, I'm going to jump off that bridge because society is telling me jump off that bridge. It was in this chaos that Conker's Bad Fur Day was born. And we got the title, and I want to say, I think IGN leaked a lot of this before Rare had a chance to update their website, to the point where we were uncertain if this was actually real or not. And
yeah, I remember seeing some articles to the effect of, like, was this a late April Fool's joke from IGN? Yeah. Like,
And so I remember being like, yeah, right. And then Rare, oh my god, like the complete mind fuck the day Rare put Conker's Bad Fur Day, replaced 12 Tales Conker 64 with Conker's Bad Fur Day on their website. They had a teaser page where, like, you would have audio clips of characters cursing at you. And DK Vine, bless our little hearts, I remember we had a transcription page for all of these clips. Yeah, I know. But, and you know, it's just like, I think it was bleeped, even like bleeped F-bombs and whatnot. But this was just unbelievable. This game, Conker, like the epitome of cutesy games that we were kind of chafing about for 3 years, now is dropping F-bombs, and it was rated M, and what? There's a write-up on Rare's website for the Conker's Bad Fur Day page, and I feel like to do this period of time, this revealed justice, we have to read this verbatim. Would you like to have the honors, or
no? Oh, sure. Okay. Conker's had a bad night. Well, actually, he's had a very good night. The problem is that nights this good have a habit of leading naturally into very bad days. And the one that you see... that. And the ones that see you waking up in a world of abusive paint pots, jabbering dung beetles, trigger-happy, scar-faced teddies, and a belligerent giant with penis envy called Bugga the Nut are generally worse than most, especially when your dealings with these characters are hindered by the king of all hangovers and the fact that your only means of self-defense is a frying pan you picked up somewhere the night before. Still, Conker's nothing if not resourceful, and he soon resigned himself to plowing through whatever madness comes his way if there's a nice soft bed to collapse into at the end of it. Who knows? He might even stumble across the odd money-making opportunity, and while he's nothing like most of his pushy, potty-mouthed sorts he gets tangled up with on his travels, he's not so naive as to pass up on the green stuff either. 3D exploration, combat and puzzle solving, cinematic cutscenes, sly movie parodies, amazing facial expressions, dozens of unhinged characters, 1-4 player deathmatch in games in a variety of styles, plus, of course, plenty of needless swearing and violence all combine to create an adult video game like nothing seen before. The mature rating should warn you from the start that some of this stuff is unsuitable for children, but everyone else is likely to have a ball. So check out these downloads before joining Conker in his exploits later this year and decide for yourself whether or not there's a whole new genre in the making.
Check out these downloads. That's so 2000. Oh my god. Yeah, and just to drive it home too, Rare's website was, they had like a blue background on a lot of like their main pages, and then on most game pages it was like a white background with black text. They flipped it for Conker's Bad Fur Day. It was a black background with white text, a black round, a dark mode. And it, just to drive home, like, hey, this isn't like other Rare games.
This is after, and then you had dark.
You had the new render of Conker leaning against the Rareware logo. And Conker in his new redesign too. His new clothing. Which tweaked his design from the way he looked in Diddy Kong Racing and Conker's Pocket Tales, and would have looked in 12 Tales Conker 64. So you were asking me for proof that DK Vine was pushing for this. Cameron came through in a way that I didn't even remember this. I had to click his proof to have it proved to me, because this sounded horrific that I wrote this.
No, this sounds like circa 2001 you.
This is not 2001 me. This is like 2000 me, all right?
This sounds like circa 2000 you.
This is the 2000 man version of Heil. So, I wrote to Rare. I wrote to Scribes on Rare's website. And this is when it was like 12 Tales Conquer 64 still. Bad Fur Day hadn't been revealed. And I said, just to throw everyone for a loop, you should make the ESRB give it an adult rating. The game intro could involve Conker peeing on the naked corpse of Howard Lincoln. What? Just, I guess, to piss off Nintendo? I don't know. So I suggested to Rare that they make Conker an adult video game franchise that urinated freely and severely sent Nintendo into a panic. So, am I responsible for Bad Fur Day? It turns out, yes. I guess I am.
Yes. 100%.
Oh my god, I'm like, what? I don't remember that. I wrote that? Holy shit.
Good times. Thanks, it's funny Cameron. That they make the, oh man, new genre in the making, but like the Oddworld games had already been doing all this.
Well, you gotta sell your own wares. You gotta sell your own rare wares. You gotta talk yourself up.
I suppose that's true.
So this was mind-reeling. And you know, looking back on this era, I don't remember this as happening in May 2000. Like, for me, like, I've kind of compartmentalized this whole Bad Fur Day reveal into this narrow window of time somehow after Banjo-Tooie. And I knew, like, I knew about Bad Fur Day before Banjo-Tooie, but for me, like, there are distinct eras, and Banjo-Tooie feels like the whole year 2000 belongs to Banjo-Tooie, right? The hype for Banjo-Tooie. So to have this spring of 2000 punctuated by the Conker's Bad Fur Day reveal, I don't remember that, but I do remember distinctly how I felt. I remember going for a drive, and because I you know, just had my license, and I remember like heading out and driving around and just daydreaming about what raunch and filth Conker would be getting up to, and how wonderful this felt, because finally we were vindicated. EGM and RareNet would have to bow before the supremacy of the Donkey Kong universe, because now we were undisputedly a mature franchise. So what were the reasons behind the 12 Tales team completely changing basically everything, including the target audience for this game, and making something that ultimately would be more of a niche project and a product, but probably get a lot more attention than 12 Tales would have gotten? And I think I just answered my own query, because it was basically they didn't have a hook. They had a very pretty game with some amazing technology and some good ideas, but they didn't have anything to really have it all coalesce around in the same way that the Banjo games did. And when you look at the three big 3D platformers of Rare's N64 output, Banjo-Kazooie / Tooie, Donkey Kong 64, and Conker's Bad Fur Day, the Banjo games and Bad Fur Day have an identity, and they have a central conceit. It's Donkey Kong 64 that feels aimless. And Donkey Kong 64 feels like, I guess we're just going to do what Banjo did, but just a lot more of it. And that's why Donkey Kong 64, I think, fails. There's stuff I like about Donkey Kong 64. There's stuff I enjoy quite a bit. But as a game, it does not have that central hook. It doesn't have a reason for existing other than we need a Donkey Kong game for the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
And I think from everything we've heard over the years, the 12 Tales team was feeling that about their own project. And no matter how much time they spent cooking it in the oven, it was still just runny batter. So they changed the recipe entirely. And you know, having it be an M-rated game full of adult humor, absurd over-the-top violence, and, you know, chock full of sexual innuendo, it was a bold move, because I don't know how they pitched that to anybody and like had it get through every stopgap that would have prevented that from seeing the light of day.
So Wikipedia has some quips about that. Basically, at the height of the team's feeling of aimlessness, Seaver stepped forward, pitching this idea to sort of give the game some cohesion and a narrative and some personality. And the Stamper brothers loved it and put him in charge of everything and just kind of let him do it.
Yeah. Because it's funny, because early on, when you see all the interviews about 12 Tales or, you know, Conqueror's Quest before that, it was Mark Betteridge who was giving the interviews. And then Chris Seaver sort of usurped it, and it kind of became his baby. He was on the team, you know, obviously, but this was the point where it became Chris Seaver's Conqueror, you know, the Seaver cut, if you will. And obviously this was being published by Rare. They still had to present it to Nintendo, but it was being published by Rare, so it wasn't like, hey, Donkey Kong's going to pull out a shotgun, a double-barreled shotgun.
That'd be ridiculous.
It wasn't like that presentation. They probably had a little bit more leeway considering it was their own IP and property. But considering it was still a Nintendo-exclusive game and Nintendo had a financial stake in Rare, it was still problematic for Nintendo. You know, they did present it to Nintendo, and apparently the president of Nintendo at the time, Hiroshi Yamauchi, when he saw Conker whip out his dick, you can't see it, but, you know, when Conker whipped out his dick and started peeing on the imps, the fire imps, apparently Mr. Yamauchi just started dying of laughter, like tears streaming down his face.
There was going to be one of two responses, and I'm glad it was that one.
yeah. Now, the other people from Nintendo at the meeting were kind of sitting stone-faced, but he loved it. The president of Nintendo at the time. Now, granted, is there correlation that that Mr. Yamauchi stepped down in 2002. And then Nintendo declined to purchase Rare. Is there any correlation there? That's a story for another day, and maybe we'll get into that in part three. But Nintendo was like, okay, but here's the thing. We'll release a player's guide, but Nintendo Power will not cover it in our monthly issues. We'll run advertisements for it, but they will only appear late at night on adult-oriented programming. We'll do advertisements. We'll do like viral advertisement for it, but it's mostly going to be at spring break parties, because, you know, the game came out in early March, so there was some crossover with spring break 2001, you know, the college crowds in the months of March and April of that year. So they promoted Conker with things like Conker condoms they gave out at spring break, which reminds me of like the joke from the US Office where the character of Ryan starts his own social networking site called Wolf. And his big idea when they've got like 9 days left before they go bankrupt is to head down to Daytona Beach and throw out thousands of Wolf condoms from a helicopter. That's essentially how they promoted Conker's Bad Fur Day. They also did Conker's Bad Fur Day urinal cakes. Handed out like pamphlets, little booklets with illustrations such as Conker burying his face in a human woman's breast.
Among other things. There was a Playboy promotion.
Yes.
Playboy's first video game promotion. Which has led to a wonderful partnership on occasion between them and Nintendo, actually, somehow. That's still ongoing.
Which, also, to show you the era this was in, the Playboy still had cultural relevance.
Yeah, that's true.
Playboy had this weird cultural resonance throughout the aughts, because then you had that skeevy reality show with Hugh Hefner and the Playboy bunnies, and it's just like, what? This was the era we lived in. So Anyway, the TV advertisement, though, if you doubt how effective it was at getting word out, I was in high school in the year 2001. Conker's Bad Fur Day came out when I was 17. So I remember that spring sitting around the computer lab, and people would pull up like movie trailers. This is pre-YouTube, right? But there would be sites where you could play movie trailers and other things. And so students would pull that up when they're supposed to be working and like show each other, hey, have you seen the new trailer for this shit dog shit movie that I don't even know. But people were pulling up the commercial for Conker's Bad Fur Day and laughing hysterically. And this was surreal for me because this is like at the point, like nobody knows I'm running this site, the DK Vine. Like this is my like Batman type nocturnal activity, right? So to have everyone like acknowledging and laughing about Conker, and I'm just sitting there like, whoa. The commercial was very effective at reaching the target audience it was trying to reach. Even if it only played late at night, teenagers still found it through those means, and they shared it with each other. And it is, to my knowledge, the only Nintendo game that's ever been promoted with a handjob joke. A very blatant handjob joke. A very vigorous handjob joke at that. Because the commercial is that there is this club goer, a party gal, if you will, who wakes up hungover, strung out in a seedy, dirty, rundown motel room. She's scantily clad. Like, I don't think she's wearing pants. Like, I think she's just wearing underpants and a t-shirt. And she's, like, talking to her friend about like, this guy she went home with last night and how they went at it all night. But now he's, like, puking and he's, like, and they're just so wasted. And then coming out of the bathroom is said gentleman friend, a squirrel,
like a realistic squirrel.
A realistic squirrel, right. I think he's wearing a shirt or something.
Well, he's got the blue hoodie on.
Is it supposed to be the blue hoodie?
I watched it before we started recording.
Okay. I've only ever seen this commercial in extremely low resolution. I never actually saw this commercial air live because I never encountered it in the wild.
I saw this air live back in the day. But
really? Okay.
Yeah, I remember this commercial happening.
Maybe I did, but I distinctly remember it from instances like this, like in my high school computer lab. But and then it's like Conker's, and then it's like he's got the keg, and you know, like You get like Conker's Bad Fur Day, the reveal, gameplay footage. Oh, this is for a video game. Drunk squirrel in a naughty world. Okay. And then we cut from that, and she is vigorously gyrating her arm. And she's like, yeah, you love that. Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. And, oh, you've linked me to it. Thank you.
actually, fairly decent resolution.
That is the best resolution I have ever seen it.
I was watching this without my headset on and had to turn the sound off by the end of the commercial.
it reads like porn. And you think, oh, she's giving him a handy. And then it like cuts it. The reveal is she's just like petting his belly, but it is like the most like I'm shocked they produced it. I'm shocked that this was, you know, like it was rare published, but this was.
I want to know what happened to this squirrel because it's a remarkably well I don't know if it's animated or an animatronic or something, but it's remarkably well done.
If it's an animatronic, it's probably decaying somewhere like those Ninja Turtle costumes from the early 90s movies.
Unfortunately true.
Maybe the actor, she rubbed it too hard and it just rubbed the fur right off. But yeah, I imagine Nintendo produced the commercial, or Nintendo's ad people produced the commercial. Even though this is a Rare published game, obviously Nintendo carried some of the weight here. And so...
Actually, I think we know what marketing company they went through.
Yeah?
I think it was Starcom? I don't think it was Nintendo.
Okay. So it wasn't Nintendo. All right. But yeah, that it's what the, I was like, I can't believe they got away with that. I can't believe this is a real commercial that aired, because it's a bit much. And I'm not trying to be a prude. I am very sex positive. I'm all about exploring sexuality in a healthy way. So I like this commercial.
Oh, Starcom actually won a couple awards for their mixed media marketing campaign for Bad Fur Day.
The condoms and whatnot?
Yeah. They apparently also threw beach parties and had a Playboy Mansion contest.
Of course, yes.
This advertise, and we just went over, and some other things.
You know, I will say this, for as poorly as Bad Fur Day sold, for all of the reasons that it would sell poorly, not game quality, it definitely had an effective marketing campaign, but I feel like the marketing campaign was known more than the game itself was during this time.
Yeah, definitely.
It did reach a lot of people, and it's still pretty legendary to this day. The fact that I can just rattle off and distinctly like bring up in my mind's eye those condoms or the urinal pads. Nintendo like let all this happen, but again, it was barely referenced in Nintendo Power magazine. I think it was just like in the game release schedule they listed Conker's Bad Fur Day, but that was the extent to which they would acknowledge it. There's a player's guide, but again, like if you were subscribed to Nintendo Power, you wouldn't know that there was a player's guide for this game, because you wouldn't know about this game. And they were very afraid of it getting into the wrong hands, aka anyone under the age of 17. And unfortunately, you know, most people who owned a Nintendo 64 were families or those who were a little bit younger, you know.
Yeah,
like I said, I inferred earlier that the college crowd mostly had gravitated towards the PlayStation. So it was kind of this situation where this was a great idea to rebrand the game. Nintendo was more supportive than they're given credit for. But at the end of the day, it was probably a wrong match to have released this for the Nintendo 64, which is why several years down the line, we were so excited about Live and Reloaded for the Xbox, because we were like, now is this game's chance to shine, and Conker is going to become the mascot of the Xbox, because every video game console needs its own cartoony mascot, and Conker is going to be it for Xbox. We've got it made.
if only.
Conker's Bad Fur Day. We can talk about how it didn't sell well, but I think it became a legendary game despite that. It might not have done what Rare would have obviously hoped it would have done, but it's up there with like N64 games. When people say like the all-time classics, Conker's Bad Fur Day is always mentioned, and it became this like highly sought after game for collectors too. I think ultimately, you know, you can view something as a success through how it did, you know, during its contemporary release, or you can view it as a success for how it did legacy-wise. And I think legacy-wise, Conker's Bad Fur Day was a huge success.
Yeah, definitely. like the very definition of a cult following.
Right. And it's definitely something that Rare has been able to parlay into, you know, merchandise and reissues like in Rare Replay. So I would imagine they've recouped their money, you know, and then some on it as the years have gone by. So, but yeah, like how did you feel about all of this, Gibbon, at the time, like when you learned a Bad Fur Day?
At the time? Well, like I said, I didn't quite connect the dots that like 12 Tales was no longer a thing and this is what it was now. To me, it was like, oh, this is another Conker game. So we've had 12 Tales that I must have missed somehow because I live in the middle of nowhere and who knows what video games actually show up here. Like for reference, I had a Japanese copy of Pokemon Silver because the English one wasn't being sold in my town. I don't know how my town ended up with a Japanese copy of Pokemon Silver. So like, I just kind of assumed that 12 Tales had come out and we'd missed it. So it's like, oh, okay, this is the next Conker game. It's rated M. This stuff they're showing is hilarious. And my parents are really strict about ratings, so I'm never going to get to play it. So I was kind of disappointed about that. As I jokingly mentioned earlier in the podcast, I was one of those kids that got picked on a lot. So I didn't have a lot of friends back in school. So I didn't actually get the time to sit down with Conker until after Live and Reloaded was out.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't really have strong opinions on it one way or another, really.
As I mentioned, I loved it. I thought this was the greatest thing ever. Because, you know, I felt like it was having Archaic and Eda 2. We now had an M-rated franchise in the DKU, and we not only have that, like, validation for whatever it was worth in year 2001 that, oh, yeah, see, it's not just for kids. But I just loved the contrast, right? Like, we have Diddy Kong Racing, and we have Conker's Bad Fur Day. Hell, we have Pocket Tales, and we have Conker's Bad Fur Day. I loved that this shared universe could have such vast gulfs in content. And to me, like, that's what makes a shared universe really fascinating, is not necessarily thematic cohesion, but when it becomes wild and diverse and unruly and almost at odds with itself, that's when a shared universe is fun and exciting for me. And Conker's Bad Fur Day delivered that. Yeah, like, and like I said, I was 17. I was 16 when this was announced, and I was 17 when it came out. So it was almost like Rare was growing up alongside me. You know, it was like, ESRB M rating is for 17 and up, and I turned 17, and Conker's Bad Fur Day was there waiting for me. So It was almost like it was all meant to be for me. So I had no complaints at the time. We have a couple calls to take. And if you would like to call in over the next couple of episodes and talk about Conker's Bad Fur Day and your own thoughts and opinions and experiences with it, please call the DK Vine hotline at 1-202-630-VINE. That's 8463. 1-202-630-8463. Call us, leave us a message, and we'll play your thoughts and respond to them on the next two episodes of The Conversation. We've got two calls about Conker's Bad Fur Day already, so we're going to play them, and then we're going to give a couple of final thoughts before we continue next time into the first part of the actual gameplay discussion, where we'll be talking about the daytime portions of Conker's Bad Fur Day's single-player adventure. All right, here's the first call. Let's play it.
Okay.
Hey, DK Vine Conversation, it's Rate A Pinball, and I am just so happy you're doing a Conker's Bad Fur Day Spotlight series, and I actually can't believe it hasn't been done already. I thought it had, but regardless, I'm super excited, and I just thought I'd share my Conker's Bad Fur Day story, where basically, after loving Banjo-Kazooie, liking DK64 and loving Banjo-Tooie, my dad and I were at the Blockbuster, and we saw Conker's Bad Fur Day, and I grabbed it and took it up to the counter, or rather, I think my dad grabbed it for me. And we went up to the Blockbuster counter, and the guy was just like, yeah, I don't think you're going to want your kid to rent this game. I'd recommend not this game. And so we didn't end up getting it out of the discretion of the Blockbuster clerk. You know, I was like maybe 10 years old at the time or something, or younger probably. And so that, you know, it makes sense. But so I didn't get to play it at all until maybe 5 years ago when one of my girlfriends at the time, well, my girlfriend at the time, got me Conker's Bad Fur Day for N64 for my birthday. And I was finally able to play it. And, oh, my God, it is a game everyone needs to experience at least once. If you've never experienced Conker's Bad Fur Day, you need to experience once. It is unlike anything ever made. It's unlike anything that will ever be made. And it was so entertaining. It's like the best movie on the Nintendo 64 ever. Just hilarious, fun to watch. The gameplay itself, passable, but you don't play Conker for the gameplay. You play it for the experience, and oh my God, love the experience of Conker's Bad Fur Day. Have a good one.
Thank you, Ray Day Pinball. And no, we haven't done a Conker's Bad Fur Day spotlight up until now, believe it or not.
Yeah,
but we've talked about Conker quite a bit, rest assured. yeah, he mentions the experience, that Conker's Bad Fur Day really is an experience, like watching a movie, an interactive movie, and that's what I've always likened it to. You know, it's not a game you play for precision, tight, crunchy controls. It is a game you just kind of let wash over you. Which, considering all of the fluids in Bad Fur Day, that might be a gross terminology, but...
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I almost, like... Part of me hears stories like that, like the Blockbuster thing, with a little bit of envy. Like, I was never young enough to experience Conker being so outrageously taboo, just, you know, like... out of reach for me, because I was at the right age to buy it, but...
Yeah, I don't know if my video store would have cared, because there were several instances where, like, we went to rent some anime that, in hindsight, was not something I should have been watching at the time, and they were like, oh, it's cartoons, this is kid stuff, yeah, it's fine. And it was my folks who were more in tune with games and anime and stuff, that were like, what? No, why are you letting people? No, stop that. Put that back. But yeah, I actually had a similar experience in that it was my girlfriend at the time, now my ex-wife, who was like, wait, you haven't played Conker yet? And you love this rare stuff so much? Okay, I'm going to dig out sit down. We're playing this right now. And I played through Live and Reloaded for the first time with her in college. And yeah, it was an experience.
And so, now you're the proud owner of a massive several hundred dollar Conker statue.
Oh, God. I sure am.
Taking up half a room.
Oh, it's so big.
It is huge. And I hate that it makes my Banjo-Kazooie statue look sad in comparison.
For context, I put one of my amiibo next to it, and the Ocarina of Time Link amiibo is about the same height as one of the legs on the throne of the statue.
Yeah, I remember how cool it was to have, like, the K. Rool amiibo. Like, oh my god, we've got K. Rool merchandise. And now we've just got, like, massive statues of rare characters. And it's just...
Yeah.
I'm like, getting so jaded when it comes to how good we've got it in the modern era. Like, remember when the only Conquer merchandise was condoms? Literal jizz rags. And now we've got works of art. Should we take another call?
Sure.
What up, DK Vine? It's John Tessier, a.k.a. J-Test Express, calling in today to talk about Conker's Bad Fur Day. Such a great game. Who doesn't love Conker's Bad Fur Day? I've never met a person who doesn't love Conker's Bad Fur Day. So, obviously, you guys are going to talk about everything Conker's Bad Fur Day, as you always do. So, I got an interesting question for you here. I got into kind of an internet argument recently with a guy who told me he didn't think, I don't think Conker will ever be in Smash Bros. I'll say that first and foremost. But he told me the reason he didn't think that Conker will ever be in Smash Bros. Was because Conker is such a bad person and he's the hero of the game. You know what I mean? Like he's such a crude individual. He does all this crappy stuff in the game. We all know what it is. You know, the people he's fucked over in the game is just a game of him fucking people over and becoming the king, basically. And he said that because he's the hero of the game and he's such a bad person that they would never let him in Smash Bros. Because they do have bad people in Smash Bros. Like Ganondorf and Bowser, who are terrible people, but they're the villains of the game. And in their game, it's told that those are bad people and they don't win in the end and they always lose. But Conker is kind of a bad person who wins in the end. And that was his argument as to why Conker would never be in Smash Bros. And I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that. You guys think that because Conker is this villain who is also the star of his game, do you think that Nintendo doesn't like Conker, first of all, but do you think that could be a reason they wouldn't let him in Smash Bros.? I don't know. They have Wario, too, and Wario's kind of like that as well. That was my argument to that guy, so. But I don't know. I have no idea. I'd love to know what you guys think. All right, bye.
Thank you for the call, John. Well, this really gets to the heart of the morality of Conker.
Yeah.
Which we will be really diving into, I'm sure, with the next two episodes. Because it is an interesting thing. It's something I struggle with. When I say how much I love Bad Fur Day, and I like the character of Conker on an intellectual level, but I really don't like the character of Conker in the same way I like Diddy Kong or Dixie Kong or even Banjo and Kazooie, because I feel like Conker, at least in Bad Fur Day, is a shitty, shitty person.
Yeah.
And that is like, in part, the moral of the story, but
yeah, he's a shitty person who doesn't realize he's a shitty person. Like he's trying to help, but he's a shitty person, so his help is shitty.
Yeah,
like so.
Yeah, he is basically someone who has been corrupted. Like Rare's take is that Conker is not vulgar like everyone around him, but I think Conker has been corrupted by the world around him.
Yeah,
in a way.
In the same section where Conker's complaining about the cog being vulgar and a horrible person, he's just flamethrowing the bats and watching them scream and die.
I think Conker is a more interesting, likable protagonist in the few times we've seen him post Bad Fur Day in a setting post Bad Fur Day, like a big reunion, for as you know truncated as that was, I really really kind of like that Conker. That is exactly mm-hmm. how I would want Conker portrayed, you know, a decade after Bad Fur Day, which is when it's set. He is more mature, he's broken still from the events of Bad Fur Day, and he is more self-aware as a result. And I'm like, that is the this is why, like, Project Spark, I adore their everything they did with Conker, because fundamentally, they got the most important thing right. They got the character of Conker right. Not just that, but they didn't keep him frozen from how everyone remembered him in Bad Fur Day. They actually took him from where that game ended, and they built on it. And that is just, I mean, that's a Conker I like. Mm-hmm. I don't like Conker in Bad Fur Day, but I like Conker in Project Spark. So I think, obviously, Nintendo goes for the most iconic version of a character in Smash Brothers, and sometimes Smash Brothers creates the most iconic version of a character, but Conker wouldn't be in Smash Brothers because, as our friend and colleague Jeff Onan has put it, he's a squirrel that pisses on people. He's not going to be in Smash Brothers.
I mean, it's weird. That's what's acceptable. Like, Bayonetta still does her get naked attacks in Smash Bros, and they pan the camera to compensate. But yeah, they have Wario like farting and eating people. They have Bayonetta getting naked. I don't think that if Conker were to get in, I don't think that would be one of his attacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Conker wouldn't get in because if you're going to do two Microsoft or Xbox Studios characters and one of them is Rare, then obviously Banjo and Kazooie are going to be it. Like, it, Conker in a lot of ways deserves to be in Smash Brothers, absolutely. And I think the series has, pardon the terminology, matured to the point where it doesn't have to be an M-rated series anymore. Big Reunion was teen. I think Young Conker, was that teen?
Yes.
Yeah, hold on a second.
But yeah.
We've had, like, we've lessened the rating of other, and some people probably view that as sacrilegious, right? While you're just toning it down, you're watering it down. But I think Conker can be, it can contain multitudes at this point. It can be anything, so long as it has a certain attitude and irreverence about it. Mm-hmm. I think what's important about Bad Fur Day isn't necessarily the crassness and the vulgar and what they're allowed to get away with content-wise. It is the way it carries itself. It is the structure and the way Conker interacts with the world around it. And I think there's a lot of ways to push boundaries without just having blatant piss and shit. Well, you can have piss. Yeah. I mean, even Big Reunion, which is rated teen, had a sequence where you pissed on Birdie. So
yeah,
it's arguable, but like I think that the same barrier that kept like Conker at bay from everything else back when Bad Fur Day was released is basically a thing of the past. You see Conker interacting with other Rare characters again. I don't know if they were still with Nintendo if that would be the case, but that's ultimately a moot point. I don't think Conker would be kept from Smash Brothers because he's a bad person. I think there's a whole host of other reasons that would keep him from Smash Brothers.
But yeah, Conker being a bad person is not the reason he's not in Smash Brothers.
And the fact that he's a bad protagonist is the point of the game. Like,
yeah, the game doesn't pretend he's a saint. It fully acknowledges that all of this is shitty.
And Conker gets his comeuppance in the end. Even if you could argue that it's Barry that bears the weight of that comeuppance, but it's,
well,
you know,
she's also kind of shitty in the game.
Oh, Barry's so terrible. Like, I'm not like that. That is the beautiful thing about Pocket Tales being released before Bad Fur Day, because Pocket Tales is kind of this origin story for how Conker and Barry became utterly repulsive pieces of shit. They are that couple that they're fine by themselves. They're fine as platonic friends. Mm. But when they get together romantically and they become infatuated with each other, they indulge in each other's absolute worst tendencies and justify them to each other. And like we've all experienced couples like this in our lives, but so instead of a couple improving each other, they just double down on their darkest and most repugnant qualities. And I feel like that's what Conker and Barry are. And that is how we get from the Pocket Tales Conker and Barry to the Bad Fur Day Conker and Barry. Even if Barry, it just feels like a completely different character in Bad Fur Day. That is my fanon for how she gets there, is that Conker and her are a bad match. Good friends, terrible romantic partners.
And like you see actually a bit of that forming in Young Conker, which is kind of has to be set between Pocket Tales and Bad Fur Day, with the two of them working together professionally and Conker being a bit more flirty with Barry and others around him, and like beginning to get a taste for alcohol, and Barry still being kind of good, but also the one who comes up with the plan of like, oh, let's like distract this guard by putting a bunch of porn in front of him type of thing. So you can kind of see them beginning to shift in that game as well, while still like also being sort of a couple, but sort of flirting around with other people as well. So yeah, you get that development there. And I like that they've kind of actually shown a bit of that in more recent installments.
As one of two people who have played Young Conker.
One of two people outside of the dev team, but yeah.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain more about this. I'm dying to play Young Conker, and as somebody who generally has adopted a far less cynical attitude than I had even 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for me, like, Young Conker is something I want
to
revisit.
It's in the grand tradition of Conker games. The gameplay is okay, and you're there for the story. So,
unfortunately, I don't think I have the space to really appreciate Young Conker and the HoloLens because of this massive Conker statue that's taking up all the room. Ray Day is also in the live stream right now. Just called in and it said, I feel like the only intentionally bad thing Conker did was the dino incident. Most other things, he was just helping people. I would argue that throwing in villagers in the meat grinder for Batula's sake, pretty shitty. I would argue that
murdering, hand wave that as being a thrall moment, but
murdering the bank guards at the Federal Reserve Bank, just in service of a Matrix parody, I think it's pretty shitty.
Wait, are those bank guards weasels?
They are, but like they're just bank guards. Like they're not.
That's true. But now you've got this retroactive continuity that he's got a beef with weasels. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't really justify it.
Cameron says bombing the cavemen. Yeah, Conker does a lot of things that in the context of a video game might seem like, oh, well, we just got to do this. But it's, again, it's doing heinous things and justifying them. And I mean, but that's Bad Fur Day. Like, we'll get into all of that. I gotta say, like, I remember, because, you know, I was 17, I was living with my parents, you know, obviously, and I didn't want them to know. It's like, you know, when you're a kid and you're looking at adult material and you quickly, like, change the channel or close the tab or something when your parents walk in. Bad Fur Day was like that to me. Like, I didn't want them to know. I even though I was 17, I had this weird relationship with my parents where I wanted them to think of me in innocent terms because I was their only child. And really, I just wanted to avoid the hassle of awkward talks. Like, I never had the sex talk with my parents because I avoided it like a pro. every time it would start to come up, I would, like, I don't know, call in a bomb threat or something. I always weaseled out of it. So as far as they know, I'm still a virgin.
show but, up with grandkids, and they're going to be like, "Oh, did you adopt?"
Oh, I'm not having kids anyway. But yeah, I remember going to Walmart. I bought Conker's Bad Fur Day at Walmart, which for me, there's something funny about that. Like Walmart, this epitome of bland, like slightly sinister Americana, and just like this like entity that's like known for its like bullshit family friendly image, but is, you know, it just wrecks communities. Anyway, I bought it at Walmart, and I remember like walking into the electronics section and being like, "Hi, I would like to buy a game," because, you know, they keep their games behind a glass case, so they have to like go over with their key and unlock mm-hmm. it. And they're like, "Which one do you want?" And I pointed to Conker's Bad Fur Day, and I was like, "That one." And then they like took it to the register, and they looked at it, and they're like, "Can we see an ID?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm being carded." The very first time I was ever carded in my life was not for cigarettes, because I've actually never smoked, not for alcohol. Man. It was for Conker's Bad Fur Day, which to me is worth it. Like that is something to be proud of, is that I lost my my innocence buying a Donkey Kong Universe game.
Wow. So,
I took it home and treated it like I had just bought a pornographic VHS tape. Like I hid it from my parents and played it when they were asleep or out of the house or knew they were going to be occupied, and, you know, had my own space in the den of the house where I had my Nintendo 64 hooked up, and yeah, took it home like I had the biggest contraband in the world, and just like reveled in my newfound adulthood. And that's where we'll pick up next time as we discuss Conker's Bad Fur Day, the actual video game.
This has been a File 2 production.
Kerrigo.